out to sea. And underwater, I go on a dive to explore a shipwreck. Then I go right up to an iceberg and take a bite of it. Charlie makes a sleek underwater glider. And you'll definitely want to see this. I come face to face with the most terrifying fish in the ocean.
Tyler gets to go on all the adventures in this episode.
That's because I got certified for scuba diving.
So don't miss the boat.
It's Popular Mechanics for Kids.
Ocean Adventures.
I'm the king of the world!
And welcome to PMK's Ocean Adventure Show.
Hi, I'm Tyler. And this is not the kind of ocean adventure I had in mind.
Look how huge this boat is.
I know. We have to mop the whole thing.
Tyler, that's the deal we made so they let us on the boat so we could do the show. Just work faster. Come on.
To the ocean.
Yeah.
Aren't you gonna save me from myself?
No, you're no Leonardo. I guess I better do your side too.
Whoa, I'm slipping. Help! Oh yeah, I guess I need to learn how to breathe underwater.
People always want to do things they can't. Fly like a bird, run faster than a cheetah,
and swim like fish.
Inventions like scuba let people go places they never were supposed to. This kind of underwater journey is awesome, but it can also be deadly.
My lungs could burst. I could get bubbles in my blood. I can run out of air. That's why learning to scuba dive is serious stuff. That's why I had to study. That's Brian. He's my scuba diving instructor.
I spent hours in the classroom.
After lectures came laps.
Lots and lots of. But I finally got to scuba in a pool. It was great because I could see everything.
Then it was my first open water dive.
I got tired very fast, and it was like swimming in the dark. But hey, now I have a license to scuba. I am
certified. If I go underwater and I come up too quickly, I can get bubbles in my blood. Just like a can of soda after you shake it. The soda bubbles over because it has too much carbon dioxide.
Blood bubbles when it has too much nitrogen. That's because the air we breathe has oxygen and nitrogen. Normally, we just breathe out the nitrogen, but underwater, you can't. Eventually, nitrogen bubbles will get into my blood.
And that can kill you.
Hey, watch it.
That's why all divers should check their dive tables before going under. So how deep are we going?
About 40 feet, or 12 meters.
So we can stay for 130 minutes.
Wow.
All right, let's go.
Now for the fun stuff. This is the chimney of an old sunken ship that we're going to explore. This steamer is called the Conestoga. A fire broke out in the engine room and it sank. It's been lying down there for over 70 years. Thousands of divers have since explored this ship, so we won't find any treasures we can come back with. The treasure I discovered is the amazing feeling of being like a fish and seeing what they see.
There's a chance that we'll run out of air while underwater. But if you're a smart diver, that shouldn't happen. That's why Brian and I practice our buddy breathing.
Buddy breathing is when I share my air with my diving partner. The idea is to take turns at breathing from one tank until we get to the surface. This is the kind of drill that could save your life.
There's one thing I didn't learn in class.
What's that?
What do you do if you have to pee?
You do it in your wetsuit.
Ew.
See, the principle of a wetsuit is that the water gets in and warms up your body. That's why they call it a wetsuit. More water will get in and it'll just rinse it out. No big deal.
I'm ready now.
This is an underwater explorer. It runs on battery-powered thrusters. You can breathe in here thanks to its large air tanks. It'll be used to explore sunken shipwrecks and discover marine life in the ocean floor. But it's still a cool tool for just zooming around.
Coming up, Charlie makes an underwater glider. Also, you won't want to miss my encounter with wild sharks.
This is the ship's engine room.
And it's huge!
It's much more modern than the old ship rooms, like in the Titanic. It's also safer to be on the ocean now because there's lots of new ways to navigate through it.
What is that?
I don't know, did you touch anything?
No?
This is the captain. We have detected an iceberg. Change course, turn right immediately.
This can't be happening. Oh, I forgot what they told us to do in an emergency.
We're supposed to stay calm and look for an exit.
This is the captain again. Iceberg ahead. Iceberg ahead. Take cover.
I don't want to die. What's so funny?
Just kidding. I just wanted to psych Tyler up for his iceberg adventure.
These mountains of ice look cool. You don't know can kill you. Icebergs are not stable. They wobble and roll over easily. They can also break in thousands of pieces without any warning. Getting too close to one can be fatal.
If that doesn't scare me, I'm gonna hunt one down, laugh through it, and then take a bite out of it. No joke.
Hi, Tyler. You ready to go hunt icebergs?
Yeah. This is Maurice, and we're going to Iceberg Alley off the coast of Newfoundland.
Like people, icebergs come in all different shapes and sizes. The average size of an iceberg around here is about the size of a 15-story building. Maurice and his company turn these great icebergs into water, then bottle it for sale. We're looking for an iceberg that's a good size for our mission. Nothing too big or it could topple over and kill us. Look at the way the water changes color near the iceberg. That's because most of the iceberg is underwater. Only 1/8 of the iceberg is showing above the water. So really, we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg.
Okay, Tyler, I think we see a perfect iceberg. Ready to go and have a bite at.
Right on!
Hello, Tyler. Here we are on our barge that we're going to go get that iceberg you saw from the aircraft.
Okay.
So where do icebergs come from?
Icebergs are pieces of ice that have broken off of glaciers in Greenland. Icebergs are not salty, even though they are floating in salt water, because the glaciers they come from are made of snow. This lucky iceberg is my victim for today.
Away we go.
To make drinkable water, the first thing to do is to lasso the iceberg and tow it to the barge, so we can get close enough to bite into it. We haul in the rope and pull it real tight so that the barge will be held close to the iceberg.
Hey, Tyler, that was pretty exciting. Now, let's go take a bite out of it now.
All right.
Okay, now we're safely alongside. We have the iceberg secured with the lines that you helped haul out for us. And what we're doing now over here, we're disinfecting the ice crusher. We don't want to contaminate this ice because, of course, this is perfectly pure.
Time to get to work.
Okay, that's fine. You're doing good there now. You're closing her off nicely. There, you got a good grab of ice there now.
Whoa, I've got crushing power.
Okay, now we're going to move it over the crusher and then want you to open it up. Okay, now just jack it. Yeah. Okay, now open it. There you go. That's it. Good. Perfect.
Crushed ice is melted in a steam room below deck, and the melted water is stored in these tanks.
Ah, good. That's a good one.
Wow, that was so cool! How long would it take to do the whole iceberg?
Oh, that iceberg there will take us about 5 days.
5 days? I wonder what it tastes like when it's done.
Oh, I think we can probably help you out there, Tyler. Here's a bottle.
All right. I bet it tastes really good.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't forget this water is 12,000 years old, so it's well aged. Cheers.
That's me, Tyler, in that underwater cage. Why are we throwing fish guts around? To attract sharks. That's coming up on PMK.
This is the first boat to motor around the world in 80 days. It's called the Cable and Wireless Adventurer. It set the round the world record in 74 days, 20 hours and 58 minutes. To get around the world, this boat had to carry more than 12 tons of fuel to power its two 350 horsepower engines. Its pencil-thin center hull and bow make it go fast for a boat, about 25 knots, which is the same as 45 kilometers per hour on land. Its wing parts help keep it steady, but the rough ocean water still got to the 16-member crew. By the end of their trip, they had swallowed more than 700 pills for seasickness.
Hi, welcome to Charlie's experiment. I'm just throwing this glider around for the sake of science. You see, lift and drag join together to make the plane fly. Hey, who put this pole here?
Huh. That's not much good in the water. Hey, I got an idea. What do you say we build one? An underwater glider.
Gliding is one of the main ways people travel underwater, like in a submarine.
Subs have engines, but they don't always use them. Gliding lets them save energy and stay quiet. It's good for spy missions. They use these kind of wings on the side to glide through the water until they reach a certain depth. Then they empty their ballast tanks and rise to the surface. Then they can glide down all over again. They can get really far without engines. We also use gliding to explore in the ocean.
Research gliders like Slogan will be able to glide for years without servicing.
Okay, let's make our own pool glider. Now, first we need to start with some plastic. I'll use this plastic jug here. And here it is. Now watch me make it fly underwater. We use a sugar cube and a metal washer to control the underwater flight.
Glue the cube to the bottom of the glider, then glue the metal washer to the cube. That'll give it weight so it dives.
Let's try it out. You see, gliders move very slowly. That's what makes them silent.
Remember our spy submarine? It fills its ballast tanks with water to sink, uses its wings to glide, then empties its tanks to rise to the top. Our underwater glider uses the weight of the sugar and washer to sink, and its wings to glide. Now watch how it surfaces. The water melts the sugar and the washer falls off. There's not enough weight anymore and the glider rises to the top.
It's pretty cool, huh? Hey, speaking of cool, the warmer the water, the faster the sugar melts. Try it in the bath. So you see, without gliding, it would be a lot harder to explore the ocean.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Now for my final experiment with a giant sugar cube and a pool full of iced tea. Not bad, but it could use another glider or two.
Long ago, people who lived along the ocean coastline noticed the connection between the moon and the tides. Whenever the moon is up in the sky, the water comes up to the land. It's because of gravity. The gravitational forces between the Earth, the moon, and the sun are what cause high tides and low tides. When the moon is overhead, it pulls on the Earth. Because the ocean is fluid, you can see it react to the moon's pull. When the moon is on your side of the Earth, the tide rises. As it moves away, the tide where you are moves out. During a new moon, the moon and the sun are both on the same side of the Earth, and there's an even stronger gravitational pull. That's when you get a really high tide.
Imagine yourself in a part of the world few people ever explore. Then, suddenly, as if appearing from nowhere, you're face to face with the ocean's swiftest and most deadly hunter. Some might call it their worst nightmare. For me, it's a chance to do my duty for Popular Mechanics for Kids. I'm gonna bring down my underwater camera so you can see it from my point of view. I'm going diving with them. I'm far off the coast of San Diego, California. There's no land in sight, and the water is several thousand feet deep. It's here where we hope to find some blue sharks, or as some people like to call them, jaws. Most people think you gotta be nuts to get in the water with those guys, but that's just what I'm doing, in a cage. I'm not that crazy. Paul here, he's a little crazier.
Yeah, thanks for the compliment.
He's the dive master. He's gonna dive with me to make sure everything is safe, except he's gonna be on the outside of the cage.
Well, I can swim on the outside of the cage because of this chainmail suit. It's my own protective cage. When the sharks bite me, it keeps them from tearing out a chunk of meat, although I do feel the bite pressure of their jaws.
The cage, Tyler, will be sunk 15 feet or 3 meters below the surface, and it'll be tethered to the dive boat here with a strong line. Remember, don't grab the mesh of the cage, because the sharks will come to the cage and they'll bite the cage.
Blue sharks eat whatever they can sink their teeth into. Fish, jellyfish, marine mammals, even smaller sharks. And on rare occasions, even people. They'll never turn down a free meal, and that's what we're offering them today.
Well, Tyler, the way that we attract the sharks to the boat is by using chum. Chum is this Pacific green mackerel that we have here today. And we're cutting up chunks of it, and we're also using ground up chum to create an odor corridor, or a chum slick.
Sharks have a powerful sense of smell. They can pick up the scent of food from miles away. One by one, they'll show up until there's a hungry group of them.
Just in case our chum doesn't work here with the fresh fish and all, we got a secret weapon. This is our shark boombox, man. We're gonna play tunes to the shark. And what it does is it actually plays low frequency sounds in the water, and the sharks can hear that.
The size of the blue sharks we're attracting today are 4 to 9 feet. That's about 3 meters long.
Okay, Tyler, I'm in the water. When I give you the all clear signal, jump in the water and follow me down to the cage.
Quicker! Whew, that was close, but I'm safely inside. Part of why sharks are attracted is that the metal cage in the salt water creates an electrical field.
Sharks have unique organs in their heads which detect weak electrical fields.
The sharks think it's just more food and come around. You can tell those are blue sharks because their bodies are long and slender, and by the shape of their tail.
Even though sharks sometimes attack people, we're not part of their natural diet. They come around because we've got the bait here. This is where the food is.
And because of the cage. As the sharks close in, you can really see why they're such excellent hunters. They have amazing eyesight. They can turn on a dime.
and their color helps them blend in with all that blue water. In these waters, they're at the top of the food chain. Nothing eats them.
The sharks can get so vicious when they bite, they clamp down so hard that their teeth often break right off. But that's not a problem for them. They grow them right back again. Thousands of teeth in a lifetime.
When we first got down there, you couldn't see that many sharks. All of a sudden, it was like this family came. There were like 10, 11 of them. Little ones, big ones. And then when he had all the fish food coming for them, the shark comes and he grabs it and he pushes it right in front of my face. So the shark's struggling to get it right in front of my face. And then you could reach out, you could touch them, you could pet them. And they're trying to get this food. It's amazing. I've never done anything like that. It was amazing.
Thanks for diving into the ocean show with us today. Tyler! Tyler, come out, we have to say goodbye. Alicia, where are you? On the dock, where are you?
Hey, Alicia, what are you doing down there?
What am I doing down here? What are you doing up there? Didn't you hear the horn?
What horn?
The ship is leaving.
But wait a sec, where is this going?
Tasmania.
Oh, I don't want to go. Come on, wait for me.
Bye, Moira.
I don't want to go. Come on, wait for me.
Bye, Tyler.
Don't worry, we'll find another host.
See you next time on PMK.
Bye.